This is the podcast for JNS Spine. Welcome to the JNS Spine podcast for April 27, 2012. I'm Natalie Pinsham. This podcast will feature a summary of an article on the cervical spine and a general interest article, both published by JNS Spine Today. Three-dimensional measurement of intervertebral range of motion in ossification of the posterior longitudinal ligament. Are there mobile segments in the continuous type? A clinical article by Takahito Fujimori and colleagues. The purpose of this study was to determine the extent of the effect of continuous type ossification of the posterior longitudinal ligament of the cervical spine on intervertebral range of motion. Five intervertebral segments spanning from C2 to C7 in 20 patients with continuous type ossifications of the posterior longitudinal ligament were measured using functional computed tomography in anteroposterior flexion and right and left axial rotation. 49 ossifications were found to be obviously continuous type. These ossifications were divided into the following two types on the basis of thin reconstructed sagittal CT. The first type was bridging in 13 instances, with thick, continuous ossification of the anterior or posterior longitudinal ligament, bridging intervertebral segments, and with a range of motion of 0.3 degrees in anteroposterior flexion and 0.2 degrees in rotation. The second type was non-bridging in 36 instances, with a minute gap in the ossification itself, or between the ossification and vertebra, with a range of motion of 4.9 degrees in anteroposterior flexion and 4 degrees in rotation. There were 8 stalagmite-type ossifications in the non-bridging group that had the unique kinematics of restricted anteroposterior flexion and normal axial rotation. The author's findings indicate that most continuous type ossifications that are categorized using the conventional radiographic classification system have mobile segments. The discrimination between bridging and non-bridging on CT scans can be a useful predictive index for dynamic factors. Sagittal spinopelvic parameters in children with achondroplasia. Identification of two distinct groups. A clinical article by Isaac Karikari and co-authors. Spinal abnormalities are common in patients with achondroplasia. Within the spinal column, the thoracolumbar spine appears to be the most frequently affected region, with thoracolumbar stenosis and sagittal deformity being the most common abnormalities. The impact of pelvic parameters on thoracolumbar kyphosis progression and the need for surgery remains unknown. Given that the spinal manifestations of achondroplasia begin in infancy, an accurate analysis of spinopelvic parameters and sagittal alignment in this special patient population is needed. In this study, the authors retrospectively reviewed spinopelvic parameters in 40 children with achondroplasia to determine if there were distinct parameters among achondroplastic children. Two groups of patients were identified based on pelvic tilt. 17 children had a negative pelvic tilt, and 23 children had a positive pelvic tilt. a negative pelvic tilt was identified in all children with an extremely horizontal sacrum. Spinopelvic parameters in achondroplasia are potentially dichotomous. The implications of this are not fully understood, and long-term studies of achondroplastic children into adulthood are needed. Overall, this study provides baseline spinopelvic parameters in the pediatric achondroplastic population to guide patient treatment and future studies. Thank you for listening. JNSPG podcast content is contained in the American Association of Neurological Surgeons iTunes U site. Sign up in iTunes for our podcasts and additional content, including video content and podcasts from the AANS, all updated continuously. To read all the articles published by the JNS this week, or to listen to more podcasts, please visit us at www.thejns.org. You can also follow the JNS on Twitter, and please like us on Facebook at Journal of Neurosurgery Publishing Group.